In this video, we'll talk about how things went very wrong in 2008 and what kind of effect it had on the Icelandic economy. This figure graphs the OMX Iceland 15, which was a stock market index of the 15 Icelandic companies with the highest market capitalization levels. From 2002 to 2008, the stock market index went up 900%. As you can see, though, the index falls precipitously in 2007, so much so that the stock index from 1998 to 2008 is ranked as the worst performing index in the world. The index actually had to be discontinued in 2009 because so many of the companies that made up the 15 had gone bankrupt or had been nationalized by the government. There were already warning signs in financial markets in 2006 and 2007, but it wasn't until when Lehman Brothers went bankrupt in September of 2008 that the crisis really hit in Iceland. Banks are required by regulators to hold a certain amount of liquid assets, and they borrow and lend in the interbank market constantly to make sure that they cover this amount. When Lehman Brothers went under, the interbank market, which had already shown strain, completely froze up. Banks stopped lending to each other because of the increased uncertainty. Glitnir, the smallest of the three main banks in Iceland, was the first to realize that they had a possible liquidity crisis on their hands. They asked the government for help, but before any plan could be put into place, the situation suddenly got much worse. The very day that the government was going to step in to help Glitnir Bank, Iceland's finance minister, Árni Mathiesen, had an uncomfortable chat with Alistair Darling, Great Britain's finance minister, and pictured here. Mathiesen let Darling know that Iceland's government may not be able to cover all of the ice saved deposits if it came to that. The British government responded immediately by freezing all of Landsbanki's foreign assets in Great Britain. It did so by putting the bank in the same category as terrorist organizations like Al-Qaeda. As you might imagine, Iceland's policymakers were not amused at Great Britain's actions or the messages sent about Landsbanki. On what turned out to be a very busy day, Britain took over the UK subsidiary of Iceland's third major bank, Kaupthing, because it said it was unlikely it would be able to pay back its depositors. This move crippled Kaupthing, as spooked depositors quickly withdrew their money. The next day, the Icelandic government had to nationalize the bank. So within less than a week, all of Iceland's major banks failed. They represented 85% of the banking sector in the country. This figure charts the exchange rate between the Icelandic krona and the euro. That is, it's the number of krona that were necessary to buy 1 euro. From January to October 2008, the krona lost more than 40% of its value. On October 7th, the central bank pegged the currency to the euro at the rate of 131 to 1. On October 8th, they were forced to give up the peg and allow the krona to float. At one point, the krona-euro exchange rate rose to 340, at which point the authorities temporarily suspended trading in the currency. After an agreement was signed with the IMF, the currency began to stabilize, albeit at a much depreciated rate than before. As I mentioned previously, Icelanders had gone on a borrowing binge from foreign banks. Unfortunately, those loans had to be paid off in the foreign currency in question. When the krona was continuously rising, that was not a problem. But now that the krona had sharply depreciated, the debt burden was crushing. It also made the price of imports go up by about 85% from 2007 levels. The crisis is estimated to have destroyed wealth equal to about 7 times Iceland's GDP. The combination of depositor losses, along with the losses to foreign creditors, is thought to equal 5 times Iceland's GDP. And the losses stemming from the crisis to Iceland's residents is equivalent to 2 times Iceland's GDP. Public and private debt was equal to 300% of GDP, and this is after a massive amount of private debts were written off as uncollectible. Those debts alone were thought to equal 500% of national income. One result of this incredible indebtedness was that the government had to spend as much on interest payments as it did on health and social insurance. Þorvaldur Gylfason, an Icelandic economist, sums up the situation when he writes, quote, "It's not surprising, then, that observers have likened the debt burden to the reparations imposed on Germany at Versailles and predict equivalent consequences, though obviously ones that will concern the world less."